Speaking on this program is Franklin Kemp.
When I was in high school, the senior class had a play. And for several weeks, we rehearsed that play. We had to memorize our parts, go through the action, and as a rehearsal for the night, the play would be put on. I've had a part in a number of weddings and been in wedding rehearsals so everybody would know when to come in and what to do and when to give the rings and so on. But did you realize that there is in the Bible a rehearsal of the judgment? There are, in fact, every judgment that we read of in the Bible is indeed a rehearsal of the final judgment. The very first judgment that is mentioned in the Bible is found in the 6th chapter of Genesis. And the principles that are set forth in that judgment when God destroyed the earth with a flood. Fundamental principles in relationship to the judgment are found there. First of all, there were those who refused to hear what the Lord said. The record says that they were interested in living for this life alone. And verse 3 says, the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with me. We know from 2 Peter 2 that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. And it was through the preaching of Noah that the Spirit was striving with me. And in the final judgment, there will be those who, like during the days of Noah, refuse to listen to the preaching, refuse to listen to the Word of God. And, of course, that means they'll be lost. There wasn't a single one that refused to hear the preaching that is accountable person, that refused to hear the preaching of Noah that was saved. And that'll still be true. There won't be anybody at the judgment that turns their ear away from the hearing of the Word of God that'll be saved. They'll all be lost as they were back then. But also there is set forth in Genesis 6 the principle that enable one to pass by the judgment without being lost. Three of them are mentioned in this chapter. We read that in verse 8, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. That is, favor. I believe the American Standard Version says favor, but all the same idea. And therefore, at the judgment, only those who have known the grace of God and appreciated the grace of God will be able to pass by. All else would be lost. God did not provide grace through the preaching of Noah and offer unto men the opportunity to turn from sin and then let men despise that and still avoid the judgment. But it took more than grace in order for Noah to be able to escape the judgment. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 7 tells us that by faith Noah, seeing the unseen, seeing things that were unknown. Listen to it. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things to come, of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by which he condemned the world and became to have a righteousness which is by faith. And so, there not only must be grace, there must be faith that must accept that grace. But not only must there be faith that accepts that grace, it must be an obedient faith. Genesis 6:22 tells us, thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, even so did he. How did Noah's faith work? Did what God said. How did Noah's faith work? Did what God said, like God said, do it. He built the ark, prepared an ark to the saving of his soul. Therefore, at the judgment, only those who through these three principles, grace, faith, the obedience of faith, will be able to pass by the judgment. Everybody else will be lost. But I want to turn now to the New Testament. In fact, every single judgment that has occurred is indeed a rehearsal of the final judgment. But there's one that is especially significant. In the 21st chapter of the book of Luke, well, in reality, in the 24th chapter of Mark, or rather Matthew in the 13th chapter of Mark, as well as in the 21st chapter of Luke, we have a picture of God's judgment upon the Jewish nation. But it has to do with the fall of the Jewish state. God's judgment upon the Jewish nation. And in this, there are some principles, just as it was with the judgment during the day of Noah, that will characterize the final judgment. As there were those in the days of Christ that rejected him and then finally rejected the preaching of the apostles, when the Roman government overran the Jewish nation, that was a rehearsal of some principles and some things about the final judgment. Now let us look at Luke chapter 21 and beginning in verse 5 of Luke 21. And as some spake of the temple that was adorned with goodly stones and gifts, he said, as for these things, which ye behold, the days will come in which there shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. The temple was symbolic of the Jewish system, which was a temporal, physical system. In fact, Paul, in talking about it in the Hebrew letter, talked about it being a worldly sanctuary. That is, a temple, a tabernacle. That is, it was an earthly system. They were the descendants of Abraham by flesh, through circumcision. They entered into covenant, and thereby became a part of that. Of course, there were those God expected them to believe, but I'm thinking about the center of the nation as such. It was a physical, temporal nation, having the temporal land of Canaan. And so the Jewish temporal system then, pictured here in these verses, is also a picture of the final end of this world. Jesus said of the temple, signifying the end of the Jewish state and God's utter rejection of it. Peter says that in the end of the world, this world in which we live will be burned up. When the temple was destroyed, not one stone was left upon another. And therefore, in the rehearsal of the judgment, this world in which we live will be totally burned up. Just as that temple was completely annihilated, never to be used anymore. Nevermore would men worship in it. It's gone. Likewise, this world in which we live will end forever. There'll be nothing left of it. It'll be completely burned up. And so, as we think about what the judgment will be like, we can know that all earthly things will be abolished. There won't be any earthly thing left. Those whose lives rest upon earthly things will have nothing. They won't be able to pass by the judgment. They'll lose everything that they have when their lives are based and built upon material things. But second, Luke 21 shows us in a rehearsal of the judgment that there will be deceived people. Listen to what he said in verse 8. And he said, take heed that you be not deceived. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and that the time draweth near. Go ye not therefore after them. And so at the judgment, there'll be deceived people just like there was in the Jewish nation. When the Jewish nation fell and was rejected by God, the bulk of the nation was deceived. Only a remnant of the nation accepted the gospel and believed the gospel and obeyed the gospel. The rest of the Jewish nation rejected it and remained deceived up to the very time the Roman army overran it. They went into the temple, locked themselves inside the temple, and it became so terrible until mothers ate their own babies, just as the Bible described it would be. And in the same way, when men stand before God in judgment, multitudes will be deceived. They won't listen to what God says. They won't believe the Bible. They won't realize that sin causes men to be lost. They won't realize that sin separates from God. They won't realize their need of grace. They will reject it. Christ offered grace to the Jewish nation. In Matthew 23, looking out over the city of Jerusalem, where the heart was breaking and eyes filled with tears, he said, "Behold, your house is left unto you desolate." And therefore God's presence left the temple, never to enter it anymore. And yet in spite of all of that, through the preaching of the apostles, and grace was offered to them, they despised it and spurned it. Until the very time the Roman army overran the city of Jerusalem, ransacked it, captured some of them as slaves and carried them to the different parts of the earth. A total rejection of the Jewish national system, never to be recognized anymore. And they were deceived because they would not believe what God said about it. But listen again to what he said in the next verse. "But when ye shall hear the wars and commotions, be not terrified, for these things must first come to pass, but the end is not by and by. Then said he unto them, nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom." And so there were those that were engaged in war, greed. The Jewish nation was part of that. And because of their covetousness, they were lovers of money. So we've already learned that Jesus said in Luke 16, and because of their interest in trying to defeat the Roman government and to defend the temple and the city of Jerusalem, because of that, they were destroyed. There'll be those at the final judgment that have been guilty of plaguing this world with war. You know what's the cause of every war that there's ever been? The greed and the pride and the selfishness of men. The desire to be their own God. What made Napoleon think that he could conquer the world? What made Hitler think that he could conquer the world? What made Japan think that they could conquer the world? What makes Russia think that she can take the world? What makes this country think that we can defend the whole world? Think about those that will be responsible for wars, being at the judgment. What's it going to be like? Can you visualize the eternal ruin and separation from God, from men that have plagued this earth because of their selfish desires and their self-will, where blood has flowed like rivers, the refusal to recognize the sacredness of life? Surely, as we read this, we must realize the price that some are going to have to pay when they stand before God in judgment. And then again in verse 12 I read, "But before all these, they shall lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and into the prison, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake." And of course, there's a picture of the persecution of the apostles through the attitude of the Jewish nation that despised the gospel and tried to stop them from preaching the gospel. They ran them out of Jerusalem. They followed the apostle Paul until they cried out for his blood. In Acts 21, when Paul was preaching his last sermon to them and trying to appeal to them to leave behind the law of Moses and obey the gospel of Christ, when he used the word Gentile, they said he ought to die. A man like that has no right to live. And they dogged his steps until they finally landed him in a Roman prison, where he finally gave his life for the gospel that he preached. And they went down in rejection. God rejected that nation, rejected that system. when the Jewish nation was overrun. There'll be those that'll be at the judgment that will have persecuted God's people, will have hated and despised them. And they'll be at the judgment and they'll be just like these people when the Jewish nation fell. The scribes and the Pharisees and the elders, and the chief priests that persecuted Christ and then the church. Those who do that have a picture of the Jewish nation going down in ruin and God's utter repudiation and rejection of them. And that's what's going to happen to people that persecute Christians. Therefore, it's no wonder that Jesus said in Acts 8 or Acts 9, when the Jews led by Paul run Christians out of Jerusalem, and Christ appeared to him and he said, "Why persecutest thou me?" And that's what he'd been doing. Paul realized the seriousness of his sin and turned from it, repented of it. He was not among the number. Of course, he died in faithfulness to the Lord because of the opposition, the persecution of the Jews. And therefore, I should learn that lesson. There were those that quit because they were being persecuted. They didn't endure it. In Matthew 24, Jesus talking about it said, "He that endureth to the end, the same shall be saved." Endures what? Endures the persecution. There will be those at the judgment that did not pay the price to live and serve the Lord. When the way became difficult, when the world despised and persecuted, they quit. Think of the people in the city of Gadsden today that's obeyed the gospel of Christ. Where are they now? I don't know what their problem may have been. I don't know what the difficulties they may have faced. But they quit. Did they let persecution cause them to quit? Did they let trials and hardship cause them to quit? If so, and they remain in that condition, we already have a picture of the judgment, what's going to happen to them. The same thing that happened to those that persecuted the church and tried to stop the preaching of the gospel. On down in the chapter, he emphasized the importance, in your patience, save your souls or win your souls. Those who do not have the patience to endure the hardship and the suffering, the sacrifice that's necessary to live the Christian life. You don't have to wonder what's going to happen to the judgment. God has already pictured that whenever He brought to an end the Jewish nation and those Christians that had turned their back and gone back to Judaism as described in the Hebrew letter. Returning back down to the temple. And that's what Paul had in mind in Hebrews 6 when he talked about crucifying anew the Son of God. Turning from the cross of Christ and going back to the temple. And by offering again the sacrifice of animals, the blood of bulls and goats, was a repudiation of the Son of God and His cross. And they were crucifying Him anew. Thereby, when the nation fell, those that had turned their back and gone back to the temple were lost and destroyed in the Jewish nation, repudiated and rejected by God. But then again, in the next verse, he said, "Settle it therefore in your hearts not to meditate before what ye shall answer, for I'll give you a mouth and a wisdom which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay nor resist." Now, this has reference to the direct inspiration of the apostles. But we have that same word that they had. And thereby, if we hold to that word as they did, then we, like they, will enjoy the same blessings that they enjoy. Most of them gave their life before the Jewish nation fell. They were not in that. But if I hold to the word as they did and am faithful to it as they were, I know what the judgment's going to be like. I know where I'll stand. I know how it'll be. But if I give up that word and fail to live by it and abide by it and to love it and study and obey it, I know already what it's going to be like when I stand before God in judgment. I won't have to wait till that day. I can see it now as God sent the Jewish nation down to ruin and rejection because they refused to accept His word, refused to abide by it. Then I want you to look at verse 22. For these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. That goes back to Isaiah 61, from which that passage is quoted. If you go back and read Luke 4, you'll find Jesus quoted Isaiah 61. But in Luke 4, when He quoted Isaiah 61, He left off this particular part of it, because He came to extend to them grace and mercy. They despised it, rejected it, turned it down. Now then, having done that, He quotes the rest of Isaiah 61 and said, these be the days of vengeance, that all things must be fulfilled. And that's what will happen at the judgment. That'll be God's days of vengeance against sinful men that have despised and rejected and refuse to believe and obey His will. Can you imagine what it was like to be in Jerusalem and be a Jew and be in Jerusalem, holding on to that system, when God's vengeance was poured out upon that nation? The Bible describes it as having never been a day like that. Even the day of the flood had never been like it. And it said never be another like that as far as time is concerned. Because that's a picture of God's wrath and His vengeance toward those that refuse to believe and obey. But then if history is correct, Schaff, the historian in Volume 1 of the History of the Christian Church, and Josephus says the same thing. Not a single faithful Christian lost their life when Jerusalem fell. God, through Christ, had given the signs in Matthew 24. When you see these things, know that it is near, even at the door. Pray that your flight be not on the Sabbath, when the doors of the city of Jerusalem would have been closed, nor that be in winter. And so when they saw the signs and the Roman army coming to invade the city of Jerusalem, Christians left. And if we can rely upon Schaff and Josephus, not a single faithful Christian died in the Holocaust that took place when the Jewish nation went up in ruin. Isn't that a wonderful, encouraging truth? It's judgment day. The earth's no more. Men are standing before God. One by one, we're all there. It's time for the separation to take place. But there'll not be a single, devoted, faithful Christian that'll hear the Lord say, depart from me, I know you not. Isn't that an encouragement to love the Lord and to live for the Lord and to be faithful to the Lord? To know that when I come down to the end of life's pathway, I can look at my life with its weaknesses and its frailties, and yet know in my own heart that I've been faithful to the Lord. And in knowing that, I can die, knowing that when I stand before God in judgment, what it's going to be like and what He's going to say, that's worth more than 10,000 words like this. God doesn't require perfection, but He does require faithfulness. And there's a great deal of difference between faithfulness and perfection. I'm sure that if you asked Hazel today, has he been a perfect husband? She'd say, what in the world are you talking about? That is far from being a perfect husband to anybody you'll find. But if you ask her, has he been faithful to you from the day that he said, I do, I don't believe she'd hesitate and say, I have not the slightest doubt but what he's been faithful. In the same way, in the same manner, when I stand before God in judgment, I will not have been perfect, but I can be faithful. And if I can know in my heart that I'm faithful to the Lord, I know what's going to happen at the judgment. I've already seen the picture of it and a rehearsal of it in the fall of the Jewish state. That day is coming. It's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. We know now what it's going to be like. We've already seen the rehearsal of it. Don't be mistaken. That's the way it's going to be. Are we ready for it? If not, why not begin your journey? Through God's favor, as Noah did. Through faith like Noah had. In your faith, doing like Noah did. All that God commands you. Believing that Christ is God's Son, repenting of your sin, confessing your faith, and being baptized. And then living faithful unto death. Then you'll know when you stand before God in judgment what He's going to say. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter thou into the joys of thy Lord.